Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome once again to the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown. I'm the co-host of this program and of the merry band of experts who have gathered here. Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and a special guest expert, Sherry Cam. She is going to be uncovering the mysteries of YouTube. And there's lots of good stuff to find out about, Matt. In our first hour of the program, we're also going to be answering your questions that you've emailed to us during the second hour of the program, helping you get back on your feet on the Internet. Thank you for inviting us into your lives and bringing the Internet Advisor and our great panel of experts and all the information that they have to share with you into your homes, your car, wherever you happen to be. Delighted to have you, or listening to us in one of our affiliate stations across the state of Michigan. Delighted to have you with us. And I think you're going to find it very much worth your while. Let me introduce our guests, our merry band of experts here. Gary Baker, of course. Good to have you here, Gary.
It's wonderful to be here.
Glad to have you in. And Cal Carson.
You know, it's really amazing. When before I got on this show, I used to listen, you know, by my radio while, you know, eating a radio dinner. And I used to say, man, what a band of
radio
experts.
Dinner.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, like the TV dinners were shaped like a television and a little aluminum tray. I had one shaped like a radio.
I got it.
It had like 35... It had 35 knobs on it. Only two of them worked, on, off volume, and then station control.
I should have never questioned you. I knew I should never question you.
It was coming.
Sorry.
But I'm glad to have you back to talk
It's so glad to be back. I mean, there's lots going on. I mean, I was doing skating last week. Right. And then, you know, the opening ceremonies at Sochi was yesterday.
Oh, that's right.
And this morning
they
I was enjoying watching skating.
They didn't ask you to go over there and run all the electronics for them?
No. I'm kind of bashful.
You know something?
About stuff
I think
like
it's
that.
Kind of, yeah, right. Considering things that are going on, it may be kind of good that didn't happen. By the way, there's an interesting Twitter handle. I'm trying to find out what it is. Has anybody seen that? Let me introduce Sherry Cam as well. Because Sherry, you know about all these things about Twitter and things like that.
Yeah,
Sherry's with us.
We should ask her.
Yes. Sherry is our social media expert here today. And I heard that there was a Twitter handle out there that the journalists are using about Sochi. And it's kind of like, you know, a major fail at Sochi or something like that.
Trouble in Sochi.
Trouble in Sochi. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And there's one picture that I saw that connected. It's two toilet seats sitting side by side. Now, I've heard of togetherness, but I think that's a little much.
Oh, that's great. Can you imagine sitting there going like, hey, how about those skaters today? You know? How about that U.S. team? That was pretty good.
Oh, my. Anyway, it's a lot of good humor there. But, Sherry, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, Sherry, you've been with us before, and you've helped us kind of get a handle in very practical ways on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about Facebook and Twitter and a bunch of other things, Pinterest. But today we're going to focus on YouTube.
Yes.
And I'm really glad because I have recently discovered there's much more to YouTube than I had imagined. I had thought it was only like, you know, dancing cats and selfies, but there's a world of stuff out there. As a matter of fact, Cal and Ed had told us about tutorials.
A virtual cornucopia of, of stuff out there to look at. And if you look at it correctly, and this is just my own personal opinion, you want to make sure what you look at out there is something that you know, can trust to being the right stuff.
Right.
And I'm sure Sherry can elaborate a little bit more on that.
But if
you got the right stuff, boy, you can learn almost anything off YouTube.
Yeah, I got to be careful. It's not like that, you know, the lady who's dating the French. French guys.
That television commercial.
Yeah, that's television right. commercial. In any case,
What I wanted to talk about as well today was the whole notion about, just kind of quickly, because we touched on it last week a lot, it was then the possibility that Satya Nadella would be the new CEO to Microsoft. He is now the new CEO to Microsoft. Now, Gary, I think you've had probably, maybe somebody else has had, have you had any experience with boards, Gary? Sherry?
Yes, I actually have.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, I'm curious, because one of the scenarios that I've heard is that this essentially was like rearranging deck chairs. Because most of the key players who are on the board continue to be on the board. Ballmer is still on the board as a major holder. I think Gates stepped down as an act as chairman of the board, but he's also now going to be Satya Nadella's wingman. And that essentially that it was like a maneuver in order to keep, and we can't figure the name of the guy, but there's a new board member coming on who was very vocal about breaking up Microsoft. And that this kind of stacks the deck. Does that make any sense in terms of boards? Or is that just too much of a conspiracy theory?
I think the people that know aren't saying, and the people that are saying have no idea. And I think that includes this program.
Oh, but, gee, I thought we could get at some good conspiracy theories.
You know...
Thank you for that comment from the politician from the other side. No, I'm just kidding.
No, this is somebody who's been on boards.
Yeah. Well, you know, in all fairness to Gary, he's doing it in the proper way. And it's true. I mean, we have no idea what the heck is going on.
Yeah.
But I would tend to speculate, and this is just me speculating, mm-hmm. that they're trying to keep some sort of stability going on within that particular organization,
right.
In my opinion.
Right.
And this is my opinion. I think they're going the wrong way. They need a fresh new look badly.
That's interesting that because that seems to be the two poles of the opinion out there. Is that
absolutely? And I think you guys have actually really touched on some ideas that the public too has some opinions certainly about what the corporate direction is and isn't. And they certainly do need some sort of new direction.
Mm. If you're looking at the consumer side, I agree.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, I think that is a key. That's a good way of framing that.
Yeah, from the business.
And all their money is made on the business side.
Yeah, exactly.
That is correct. Yeah. That is correct.
So don't blow that up.
No.
Right.
But I think that is the commentary that I've heard is that the consumer side is one. Because Satya Nadella, for instance, was in charge of Azure and many of the other cloud-based kind of things.
All on the business side.
Yeah, all
on
the business.
Making tons of money.
Ton of money.
Great
job
doing
exactly.
wonderful things for Microsoft's bottom line.
Somebody said it. Right? Yep. Somebody said that it's like Microsoft has become the new IBM. Is that a fair analogy?
Yeah.
Man, if that's the case, they've come into their own. I would think they're not the new IBM, they're the Microsoft that they finally could be. Right?
Mm, okay. It's interesting. Will be interesting because of the challenge that Cal mentioned as
but
well.
But good company.
Oh, Lord. Profitable, etc.
Right. The Big Blue hasn't ever gone away. You know, no matter when they've counted them down, they've always bounced back at some level.
However, they have come close.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, a few times. Yes.
All right. Back in just a moment. And Sherry is going to lead us into the mysteries of YouTube. Thank you for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and Sherry Kim with us in studio. By the way, Ed Riddell is right now spending some quality time in Lost Wages.
You know, it's funny. You know, they had the Consumer Electronics Show out there, and he waited till after that, and then he went.
It's because his wife, Tina, didn't want him, you know, buying anything foolish when he was out there. That's the issue. That's
the real issue. So in this case, just give the money away rather than bring something back.
Well, Sherry, thank you so much for joining us. And part of my rationale for inviting you in and for focusing this program, this first hour of the program, on YouTube is that, to be very honest with you, I had a misconception about what YouTube was.
What did you think?
I thought it was like, you know, dancing cat videos. It was really frivolous and foolish. Now, I have to say that Cal and Ed had told me it's a great place for how-to videos. So I said, okay, fine. But I had no idea of what it was capable of until I went looking for something that I was very interested in. I'm going to get the other two guys to comment on what they've gone to YouTube for. But I was looking for a British police mystery series called Jacobs and Bailey. And I couldn't find it anywhere. So when I Googled for it, suddenly it says, it's on YouTube. And I thought, what? There are TV series on YouTube?
Oh, yes.
Boom. And all of a sudden, we sat down one night and actually binged on watching all these episodes, etc. So that was my introduction to the fact that YouTube has much more than just kind of self-serving videos or these other things as well. So let's start with kind of a basic primer about How do you connect to YouTube?
Essentially, you can use your search bar and go ahead and put it in, and it pops right up. It costs nothing, and you don't need a subscription to actually see. But in order to be able to interact with it, you actually need a Gmail account.
So when you say interact with, you mean like uploading something to it? Or
uploading and leaving comments and
okay.
subscribing.
Okay.
And so you can subscribe to particular channels and you can look at things of interest and you can also do your searches, you know, based on things that you have viewed previously. They make those suggestions a lot like Amazon does.
Okay. So you without a Gmail account, you can look at what's on YouTube.
Absolutely.
Anytime. You can search it, et cetera, and maybe watch what's on there, but you can't interact with it on a deeper level, in a sense.
That's correct. Yeah, okay. you can't collect those things that you may have of interest in order to be able to quickly get back to them. You'd actually have to know either the name of the author or perhaps the name of the title of the production.
And that's what you mean by subscribing.
By subscribing, what you do? Yes, you put them in your liked section.
Okay.
And your subscription section, so that you can quickly access them on your mobile devices,
as opposed
to when you're on your PC, it's much easier to do a search and to find.
Yeah. You just used a term, Sherry, that I'm not familiar with. You said collect. Now,
yes.
What exactly is a collect function that you do on YouTube?
Collection, I have a collection of channels,
okay.
is what I call them, that I keep on my, it's close to my menu bar, and I can have them at easy visible access, but also easy mobile access.
So it's like a, for lack of a better way of putting it, your own personal YouTube TV guide.
That's right.
Or
that's
favorites.
Exactly
favorites
it.
Might
that,
be
a favorite section.
Yes.
There we go.
Be
yes. And
now,
that's exactly
explain
it.
Channels to me, because that was, again, one of the mysteries of this thing, that what is a YouTube channel?
Very simply put, in order to be able to protect a lot of the material that's put out there that's licensed and copywritten, there are official channels by whom are able to put out or produce those videos that they have copyrights.
An example
to,
would be?
Like the Beatles has a collection, right? And so the Beatles owns their own. Paul McCartney owns his own collection.
Oh.
And he really only has the rights in order to be able to put that out onto YouTube.
And to put content onto
that channel.
That's
right. That content onto that channel. But content onto YouTube, period. Because YouTube will take down materials that it, in a search, thinks might be copywritten.
Yeah, they're pretty vigorous on
they
that.
They are.
They're very vigorous on that.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
So now, could I, if I have a Gmail account, then create my own channel?
Absolutely. Yes.
And,
yeah,
and
sure
post
can.
Things up there.
You
we could
sure
have
can.
An Internet Advisor channel, Gary. We could put your smiling face up there.
We're thankful this is radio. We are very thankful this is radio.
Okay, but the idea is that you can actually create a place that people can come and get your content and fresh content, whatever else is there.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
And it's is it limited in any way?
It's only limited by what you are able to actually upload. No. It really is limited by your own equipment.
Is there I'm sorry, Cal, you're going to ask a question, but just quickly, is there a limit to 3 minutes that you could, of stuff you can upload, or you can, there's no limit to the time up?
Well, no limit to the time.
Wow.
Yeah. You can have a 3-hour production movie. A full-length movie on there if you really chose to. But for mobile users, that's a lot to download. So
yes. In
order for you to have your followers see your content, you do tend to break it down probably in 20-minute
gotcha.
Segments.
I got you. Cal, you can ask questions.
Okay, I'm opening up my bag and taking out my tinfoil hat for those folks. Because I have to ask a couple of questions to Sherry because I know you know more than I would.
Oh, no.
Number one. The disclaimer or all the rights that I give up with my Gmail account, are there different rights for YouTube or do they just travel over?
At this point, because they are joined, they travel over.
Okay.
They travel over. So that Google does know what you've put up there.
Okay, and then the second one is, when I put stuff up there, is it mine to keep or does everyone in the world can have it and or... doesn't that automatically give Google rights to it?
Provided that you have copywritten it and you have said as much, you get to keep the rights to your materials. But you actually have to go through that process.
What
Otherwise, it's questionable. It's that.
If it's up there, if it's digital, it's gone. It's somebody else can take it down and do anything they want with it. I mean, practically speaking, not legally or morally, but practically.
There are videos that have been taken down that people have actually embedded, and so they have one of those very rare copies of what perhaps wasn't intended for YouTube viewers.
Now, you mentioned the word embedded, because I noticed when I've gone to YouTube, there's like a menu down below, and they have the thing that says embedded. What does embedded mean?
Embedded means that you actually take what we would think of as a player and the content itself and actually put it onto a website or onto whatever scribed or whatever it is that you actually wanted this video to play on, and it will automatically launch for the viewers so that they don't have to follow a link in order to go back to YouTube.
Okay, so that little share button on YouTube, is that embedding or is that just giving me a link for them to follow?
Truly, it's giving you a link because Facebook has it embedded. Let's just say it's either Twitter or Facebook that you shared it through. They actually have the mechanism in order to be able to play it.
Yeah, right. Yes. So they're actually embedding it when you share it with them on Facebook and Twitter as well. Okay, so those are now you mentioned the difference between desktop and folks that's like at home with your computer or mobile, but maybe your phone or a laptop or the Surface that Gary's working on or I'm working on or an iPad. What's the difference in terms of the experience?
The experience, it's a much richer experience on a PC simply because you can view multiple columns of information when you do a search. When you're on your mobile, it is the one column of information. So it's one column of the videos primarily for the word input that you've given it or the idea or the concept that you've given it. Otherwise, if you have those favorites on the left-hand bar side, then you can go back to them immediately.
So I could create, let's say, my favorites on my desktop, and then when I go back to my phone, I could then go into the favorites immediately.
Absolutely.
I have my detective stories or whatever else it is.
That's exactly it. That's right. So if you wanted something to be played for this show and you wanted examples, you would probably put those in your favorite section so that you could bring them right back up.
I see. Okay.
And just for clarification, in the general sense, you said PC, which you meant generically, which means any desktop computer,
right.
Regardless of platform, Unix, Mac, or Windows, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, by the way, that brings up something, though, Sherry, that I experienced, that I have an Apple TV, Cal, and one of the problems I have was searching on YouTube was awful. Mm. I couldn't find my way. It was completely awful. However, when I went to the iOS app, the one that's on my iPhone, it was brilliant. And that, as a matter of fact, was where I found the TV series finally. So I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sherry, I want to talk about some of the applications of things you can do with YouTube just to kind of open people's minds to the cool things that are out there that people use YouTube for. Folks, I hope what this is doing is kind of making you as curious as it made me, not only to find a new TV series, but also maybe to put up some rather revolutionary content yourself. You might say that today we are unveiling the mysteries of YouTube. Maybe not a mystery to most of you. I think probably to a lot of people, YouTube is kind of a mystery out there. It's this big thing that you've heard people talk about, you know, people putting pictures up and all sorts of weird and strange kind of images.
No, Foster,
we
just didn't tell you.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay, I'll buy that. Anyway,
But you know, a lot of people, they've gone to YouTube, they've seen some of the videos, yeah, that's great, but people don't post there because they think, well, why would anyone ever want to see a video that I would create?
Mm-hmm.
But there's lots of reasons for that.
Oh, one of the other things, too, is I thought, how would you find anything? This is like a needle in a galaxy-wide haystack. You know, how would I find anything in there?
That's how YouTube has grown up. And I think that's really why the channels came into place, is that there needed to be some organization, at least for the consumers, because it was a miasma of all of these videos.
It's interesting. You mentioned that kind of there are consumers and there are businesses that have learned to use this as well. Now, let me tell you, by the way, at InternetAdvisor.net, with our show notes, Sherry has provided us with some links to all sorts of groups of people that are using this. And I'd want to take the time up to talk about all of them individually. But there are things like TED Talks, makers are using YouTube, crafters. There are tutorials out there, schools.
Yes.
There's ways that schools can use YouTube, and maybe we'll talk about that specifically in just a little bit. But let's go back, and I wanted to get each one of you guys, Gary and Cal, what are ways in which you have used YouTube?
Which one of us do you want
to start with Cal.
I don't know. It's always age before beauty, but that's another story. I'm sorry. I'm so bad. I just recently got a house, and I basically remodeled the entire house.
Wow.
And the things that I did not know specifically how to do, I used YouTube videos profusely.
Wow.
Either independent ones by people who just put them up themselves, ones put up by manufacturers saying, here's my product, this is how you install it, every possible way. And I have learned just everything that I need to do to do this job correctly. And it's been great. And I use it a lot for that sort of thing.
Excellent.
Oh, gee, you know, I want to bake a cake. YouTube, what the heck?
That's interesting.
You know, so it works great.
Yeah. Gary?
So I videotaped my son's lacrosse games at Detroit Catholic Central last year. He was a freshman, but he played on the JV team.
Right.
And I put them up on YouTube for all of the other parents and all the other players to actually see.
So you had your own channel?
See that. So we put it into like a little private area. So I guess it's my own channel. The other thing is that, you know, when college coaches have been asking Justin for his video, he's able to give them the link and they go right there and can watch the highlights, not the whole games, because they only want about 2 minutes.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Okay, so, great way.
So that works really well.
Now, for me, I mentioned this before, so I'll just be brief about it. For me, it was the discovery that there are TV series that you can get. In particular, some of the things on BBC that I love, British detective series that I just absolutely love, that I couldn't find anywhere else. Is there a lot of content like that for Cord Cutter, Sherry?
There is a good amount. Let's just put it that way. It's not extensive in that it encompasses everything. There are some artists who have asked their materials to be pulled off simply because they didn't give permission initially. And so there were times, and I'll use one specifically, where Colin Quinn did something, an HBO special, and it was all about history. And again, they broke it out into 20-minute segments, and you couldn't find it anywhere. You could not get it on Netflix. You couldn't get it on Amazon, any of the other places. And somebody put it up. And I think at some point, somebody pulled it right back down. It was because I don't think they had permission in order to be able to
it. It was interesting because this Scott and Bailey, this particular detective series we loved, and we watched all of them, they were collections.
Yep.
They were somebody had collected all of them together, and there was a certain, like, their email address was there as the person who. So that's how those things work, that people can actually kind of create a collection and then make it available for people?
Well, and that's where it gets fuzzy. It depends on the artist, and it depends on the producers and the directors.
Okay.
The long story short program that I was talking about, Seinfeld. Was actually the director. I think he's the one who asked for it to be taken down because they want the proceeds to go through the video sales coming just over the YouTube.
In other ways, it's brilliant because it gets around a lot of the other, you know, hurdles that people have. Let's talk about some of the other things that people could. I'm sorry, Cal.
Well, if I can interject at that point, because we talked about video sales and revenue streams, tell us a little bit about how YouTube can make an individual money if they wanted to be able to do it by posting and selling advertising?
They can. It's minimal. It's by pennies. It's by views. But there are those companies that actually have ads that they will place over your particular channels, your particular websites that you subscribe to. And provided that they follow the link that you have, you actually get the money for the viewer having seen their ad on your channel.
And as we know, there's only like pennies at for every view and stuff like that. But if you were lucky enough, I don't know, to have a video go viral, you might pull in a couple hundred bucks, right?
The most viral video I saw was the Red Bull Descent to Earth.
When the guy jumped out of that.
And they live streamed it on YouTube as opposed to using like a live stream video. And there was a lot of interaction that went on that.
I see YouTube really trying to bite into what Amazon and Netflix are doing and a lot of these other providers of video content because they've got the source and they got the ability. They've got the mechanism to deliver it. I think that may be expanding. So
they have the mechanism, but the problem is, unlike the networks and the cable companies, they don't produce the raw product. And if you don't have control over the production of the raw product, you have nothing to offer. So, for example, what she said with Seinfeld, they decide, no, we don't want you to put that up there. We're pulling it down.
But on the other hand,
but do they have nothing to offer? It's just like Facebook.
Well,
there's a lot out there that people want to see. You know, there's a lot of people out there that just want to create and they don't care to make money.
Well, that's different, but
they don't care to make a lot of money.
In a sense, he was talking about cutting the cord. You have to be able to have product to provide to people or else it's just not going to happen.
But see, my point is, I think that YouTube provides that means of providing content. That's the exciting thing about it. Sherry, one of the things you gave us as a link was about schools using YouTube. And tell me about that.
There is. There's an educational channel, if you will. And this is where teachers are the best sharers of information. I really think that they've latched onto something here. The best examples of a physics lab.
Oh, yeah.
The best examples of the written format for college applications. The best examples of what this math problem will do or won't do if you get the concept. Because calculus is a very complex issue, and learning it isn't always the same way for each
student. I dropped out after geometry.
And so, in order to be able to gain access to places like Purple Math or Khan Academy and places that really do have content that is their way of teaching a concept, then it's fabulous. It really is. And teachers can use it in their classrooms and be able to, with their network accessibility, because it's limited, they can't always access everything. Provided that it's been cleaned for their educational network, they can use that content and pull in the classrooms easily.
Now, we have links to that, by the way, online, folks, at internetadvisor.net, along with a number of other ones. You said clean, and I want to touch on that, because one of the things that we talked about before we came on the air is that there are some caveats, some warnings that people need to have when they use YouTube. Why don't you share some of that, too?
Absolutely. Just like the internet, everybody's really good at using those user words, you know, the ones that will get the young eyes onto something. And then, of course, the content is completely different than what the title actually says.
Right.
But the other trick, and YouTube has been good about bringing them down, is that it will be a content that they assume that they are viewing. Unfortunately, the blue part of what they wanted the kids to view will be at the end of the video. And so parents have to know and view each of those videos.
Got kids. How do you prepare your kids for using? I know you have schooled your children really well about how to use it. If I remember last time we were talking, you don't cut them off on it, but you teach them how to consume it. Gary, you've talked about that with your kids as well, and I'm sure, Cal, you did as well. Make them wise consumers.
Certainly.
How do you help them to be wise consumers of YouTube?
Well, you can't watch over their shoulder every time. You do have the computer, obviously, where everybody is viewing it so that they're not in a dark corner discovering because they're curious. But you do ask occasionally, or even more than occasionally. Something surprised you as you were going through. Have you seen any of these things? And just have great conversations about them. It's not enough to say, when you see something, raise your hand. Or when you see something, you know, tell an adult. It doesn't always happen that way or occur to them.
Yeah, but engage them in that kind of conversation. Now, Sherry, you have a particular campaign that you're involved in with schools.
I do.
On the east side of Detroit. I want you to talk about that. We're coming back with Mike Brennan in just a moment with the highlights from MI Tech News. Mike will be here with that. And when we come back, Sherry, I want to maybe wrap up our conversation talking a little bit about this campaign that you have with schools, getting technology into schools. We'll do that. Sherry Cam coming back in just a moment. It's that time of the program to catch up on the Michigan Technology News, mitechnews.com, with Mr. Mike Brennan. Through the support of ITC, the nation's largest independent electricity transmission company, Warner, Norcross, and Judd Attorneys at Law, and also the Engineering Society of Detroit. Thank you very much for their support of mitechnews.com. Mike, welcome. How are things out there in the frozen wastes of West Michigan?
I have 3 feet of snow in my front yard, Foster, and I'm so tired and so sore. I didn't get the service this year with the plow. Need it last year. I've been shoveling every day since Thanksgiving.
I tell you, you got great upper body strength, though.
I'm like beefed up now. So,
well, let's head into the meat of our headlines here, and what I thought was kind of fascinating is that Detroit startups are going to be competing for a chance to pitch Google back at the mothership.
Yeah, well, they got to get through Detroit first, and that's what's going on now, is it's all coming out of the folks at the Madison block, which includes Grand Circus, where a lot of this, that's a co-located place where you can do training and all sorts of stuff like that. Anyway, so the deadline, unfortunately, is Sunday night on February 9th. But what happens then is you apply, and then there's a vetting service, and then you have to, there's audience participation later in the month where they're going to, you know, pick the ones they like, and then professional judges will decide who goes to California to go to Google to pitch the big guy.
That's kind of neat, though, that there is an avenue now for tech startups here in the Detroit area and Michigan to be able to do that kind of thing. So that's exciting as well. By the way, I had seen this notice elsewhere, but this is fascinating, about the One Ring scam. Talk a little bit about that headline.
Well, you know, we all, well, most of us anyway, have caller ID, and I don't typically, if they're blocking their call, I don't want to talk to them. I don't know who the heck it is, right?
Right.
And so they're playing on that, the bad guys being out of the Caribbean. There's this ring of folks that have this premium toll service, and if you pick up the phone, it's $19.95 charge, or if you call them back. A lot of people will say, gee, I missed that call, I better call them back. If you do that, it's a $19.95 charge, so don't do it.
So what happens essentially, folks, is that you get a single ring on your cell phone. You think, oh, darn, I missed that one. But if you look at the number, you're not going to recognize it. And as a matter of fact, I was seeing that it, instead of being 268 or whichever it is, it kind of looks like something from your area code. And when you go back to call them, you're charged this horrible fee, like $20 per minute. And so the idea is, if you get this one ring, do not touch it. But go to mitechnews.com and find out more about that particular one. Well, speaking back about people doing nasty things on the internet with phones, Russian hackers apparently have gone after the guests at Sochi.
Surprise there. I mean, Russia is like hacker.
It's hacker heaven.
And Russian Business Network are the organized crime. That's what they do. So, gee, wouldn't they want to go where all the money is, right? Instead of Willie Sutton robbing the banks, they're just going to rob cell phones and the laptop. Everybody cares.
All right, hey, Mike, you know what's happening? We're getting you breaking up. I'm going to ask the engineers to give you a call back while I tell people about mitechnews.com.
You know, Foster, when he was talking about those phone calls, you know, I've gotten like three of those in the past week, and guess where they're coming from? Antigua and Barbados.
Exactly. They're coming from, and so if you call back, you get nailed for this international call. That's the scam.
What a deal, eh?
Oh, man. By the way, mitechnews.com is every week is delivered to your door free of charge. All you got to do is to sign up for it. That's it. No money changes hands. Simply go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page a little bit, and there's a button you can click on there where you can subscribe to mitechnews.com. And you will get a whole wealth of information, not just national, international, state headlines about technology. If you're an entrepreneur, you're also going to be finding about organizations and about meetings that are coming up that could benefit you as well. That is absolutely free of charge. Mike does all the legwork. He gets out there, gets that information for you, and then he brings it back and packages it up with mitechnews.com. Again, that's very easy for you to get in touch with, and simply go to internetadvisor.net and subscribe. Hey, Mike, let's wrap things up by talking about something we talked about, entrepreneurial events coming up and how you let people know about what's going on and how they can connect. And there's an AIM West event that's coming up in mid-February.
Yeah, it's the last of the old Connect Tech Network that Automation Alley used to run. They went their own way in Grand Rapids Natch, right? Anyway, so AIM West is actually very successful, typically draw a couple hundred folks. But anyway, the event coming up on February 19th looks at IP law, looks at how do you protect yourself when you start a business, to keep, you know, how to do non-disclosures, intellectual property, all that stuff.
Excellent.
And a really nice panel of folks there. So that is a very complicated issue, but you really got to protect that because that's the heart and soul of your business.
And by the way, folks, this is the kind of thing that Mike makes available through MITech News. It's information, great resources for you if you're already a business owner or if you're thinking of getting into it, if you want to look at some of these things like how do you get your plan in front of Google's eyes out in Silicon Valley. That's a great big part of what Mike does with MITech News. Mike, thanks so much for being with us and for sharing our headlines this week.
Thanks, Foster.
Take care of yourself and have yourself a good week out there. Be careful shoveling snow and all that cold out there. By the way, MITech News is brought to you thanks to the folks, ITC, the folks who distribute the electricity Throughout the Midwest, Michigan's energy future is in their hands. Warner Norcross and Judd Attorneys at Law. How well protected and capitalized is your intellectual property? And by the Engineering Society of Detroit. I want to step back into a conversation with Sherry Kamb, who is with us in studio right here. We've been talking about YouTube. Sherry, I wanted you to take a moment to talk about something that's near and dear to your heart, a campaign that you're involved with that has to do with technology in schools.
Yes, it really is. We have a school district that our kids attend, which is Grosse Pointe Public Schools, that has some buildings that are turning a century old.
Wow.
And they're beautiful. They're historical buildings. But what has happened in maintaining our buildings as such is that the technology infrastructure is really quite decrepit. There are 3-foot walls, and there's marble facades, which really wreaks havoc with Wi-Fi
yes.
and technology infrastructure. So we have come to realize that no matter how evolved we become as users, we can't get to it in the schools.
Yeah.
And so we've asked our residents to really take a look at building an infrastructure that will get this school to the next century. It won't matter what the device change is mm-hmm. or what the technology change is if the infrastructure itself is capable of getting it to the kids and getting it into
excellent.
And
so
at
that,
some point, you know, you have to make a choice, right?
You're
going to keep this really cool old building, mm-hmm. right, that mm-hmm. will be something that a number of our ancestors are going to cherish. But it might not be used as a school anymore because you're not going to disadvantage your school kids.
Right, exactly.
And not let them have the same capabilities that the school systems on either side of you have.
So this is a bond issue that's being raised in Grosse Pointe, right?
That is correct.
Okay,
yes,
very good.
That sure is.
When will that be tackled? When's that coming up?
February 25th.
February 25th, okay.
Yeah, and so what happens, which is very unfortunate for our school-aged kids, is that they have a midwinter break the week right before the actual vote.
Okay.
So it's tough. And our residents with school students is only 23% of Grosse Pointe schools, or the Grosse Pointe, of all the Grosse Pointes. So we actually have the predominant population who don't have kids in the system. And that is the largest hurdle that we have come to realize.
Yes.
Grandparents do realize the need, and the students do realize the need, but there's a good plenty of residents who don't have either.
It's not as sharply felt a need. You know, one of the things I wanted you to talk about just before we left here was, and Cal, I think you had something we would want to bring in as well, about business applications of YouTube. Just kind of quickly before we leave the subject of YouTube.
Yep.
How could they use it?
Well, when it first started, businesses were just using them as putting their ads on, the cool ads that they really mm-hmm. wanted everybody to see. Now, the content, I think, and the best way that they can use it is either the live streaming, which is, again, a form of promotion, or the how-to services for their products,
right.
I think
training.
Is probably the
Cal
best
brought that
way.
Up. Yeah, Cal That's brought right. that up before in terms of other things. Oh, Sherry is going to stick around for our second hour. Cal and Gary here as well. We're going to answer some of your questions.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome to hour number 2 of the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, along with Mr. Gary Baker. For lo, these 16 years, delighted to be able to help you out. Matter of fact, the focus of our program this second hour is, as it has been for those 16 years, focusing on your questions. Where you're looking at email questions that you sent in. Cal Carson is here to help answer some questions, particularly from the Apple side. And Sherry Kim, who is our expert in social media, is also in studio to help as well. Back with that in just a moment. Welcome back to hour number 2 of the Internet Advisor. Certainly hope you can hear both of these hours. By the way, the nice thing about this is that you can download it at your leisure. And if there's a particular topic that we talk about, you can go back to that and listen to it a couple of times and get the advice that we have there. We'll also, in our show notes, if you go to internetadvisor.net, try to include as much as we can in there so you can link to some very important things. Sherry Kamb had a lot of great links that she gave us that we posted at internetadvisor.net for dealing with YouTube. As one example. And again, thank you very much, Sherry, for joining us here in studio.
It's a little bit of, okay, push a button. There you go.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for bringing that touch of class to this rascally group here. Cal Carson, good to have you here, too, as well.
And, of course, I bring no glass at all.
But you do bring is some expertise with Mac and Apple devices, and we have a question, matter of fact, we're going to bring up in just a moment. One of the things that I heard a story about, Gary, and I know that you are somebody who's very familiar with finances, was this whole thing about Bitcoin. I think all of you have probably heard about it. It's still a bit of a mystery what it is. I was listening to a rather extensive commentary on NPR about it, and what's fascinating about it is it has become like the medium of exchange for drug lords and for people laundering money.
You know, it's remarkable that it's gotten the play, and that there are some decent-sized companies that are thinking about how they're going to use Bitcoin. And what Absolutely. It is it's a form of exchange. It's a medium of exchange.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen this in all sorts of different forms over many, many years, bartering exchanges where they take and they exchange credit, and you have your service and you provide that to somebody who then gives you a credit and you can use that.
And it's kind of arbitrarily assigned, right?
Right. And it's there's somebody that kind of says this is a relative value, and then you negotiate and they give you so many credits. And, you know, a bartering system goes back to before there was dollars and cents.
No,
right?
We should
before
say
a medium of exchange.
Yeah. Bitcoin was created. There's a mathematical formula for creating the original Bitcoins, or what they call mining
Bitcoins,
right?
And then they turn around and doubled the number.
Yes.
Okay. So what if they double it again? That means the value goes down by half.
It also means
if they double it again, the value goes down by another half.
Doesn't it mean it's very risky? In other words, it's a very, very risky place to be doing any kind of investing.
You know, so when we move the dollar off of the gold standard, right, which is we had gold that was a value of a dollar sitting in Fort Knox,
right?
And we couldn't get any more money because we didn't have any more gold,
right?
That made a lot of sense, right?
Right.
However, when we got off the gold standard, now it's the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Well, okay, I think I'm going to trust the government. If there is no U.S. government, no money is probably going to help me at that point.
And
right?
By the way, I've lived in countries like Argentina where suddenly they lopped the last three zeros off of a bar. Like $10,000 became $10.
Yeah.
I was there when it happened. So that's the kind of thing that can happen when you lose the confidence of the
government. That's right. So I don't know where Bitcoin's going to go.
Right.
But I don't have any Bitcoins.
Well, it's kind of interesting that the state of New York is trying to, they're very seriously considering regulating it.
Understandable.
Cal?
They would do that.
I was listening to the radio the other day, and I was listening to a travel show, and there is a hotel reservation chain over in Europe that currently will, when you reserve hotel rooms with them, you can either take infrequent flyer miles with your airline, or you can take it in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Overstock.com is actually taking Bitcoin as well.
Yep.
And there's big and small companies are doing it, but it's a real gamble.
I could see doing it at the margin, right? Just like the travel companies, the airlines, right?
They'll when you say at the rewards. Margin, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's marginal business anyway. You're probably
okay,
not going to get that business,
right.
So take a chance. I can provide it. Some companies, it's easier to do than others if you're providing a service like an airline, and you can only fill a seat that's there that isn't going to be filled by a paying customer. Otherwise, they say no more, you can't use your frequent flyer miles for this flight, right? Because I have paying customers for those flights.
Yeah, right.
If you do something like that, that makes a lot of sense, right? For other things where I have to pay 85 cents for a dollar's worth of Bitcoin, if I have 85 cents of real cost, I'm not sure I'm going to spend my 85 cents and only get 100.
So sure,
one Bitcoin for it.
Do you and Doug have a Bitcoin account someplace?
No, not at all. And as a matter of fact, we don't even, most times, we don't even know what country they're being offered through.
Yeah.
So again, it comes down to that, where is the trust? What is its value?
And
how would you
And
use
some
it?
Of the clearinghouses were recently scammed, weren't they? It was like a bank robbery, if you will, where some of these hundreds of thousands of Bitcoins were stolen from somebody.
The credits were all stolen. That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
And so all of the accounts were at zero, and yet somebody else was using them someplace else, and it's untraceable.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's the value, apparently, and that's why the drug lords.
Well, exactly. And that is money laundering and drug lords, and that's why the U.S. government in particular, I think other governments as well, are very, very concerned about that.
Hey, you know, I just saw in online the other day that Osaka, the train station in Osaka is going to have...
Japan, right?
Mm-hmm. Osaka, Japan. It's going to be the... set for a very, very large face recognition study. So as people come through the train station, they're going to be able to pick out faces out of the crowd and know who's getting on what train. And can you imagine trying that here in the U.S.?
Well, my mom lives
at least
over
not
there.
Right
if
now.
You watch the, if you watch this, if you watch the series Person of Interest, it's already going on.
No, I was gonna say my mom lives over there right now, and so she's very recognizable as being Caucasian.
Caucasian, yes.
But it's coming. It really is coming.
Well, I think it's here already. If you watch Person of Interest, it's here right
with all the with all the multiple cameras.
That's still Hollywood, Buster. You got to remember that's still Hollywood.
But the technology may be there.
It is there.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about a question about Windows 8. I'd like to acknowledge some of the people who are behind the glass here. Shanna Maley, thank you very much, our engineer, for making things happen here. And we found possessor of a YouTube channel herself. Matter of fact, she's kind of a video queen, if you will, on Blind, right? And Annie Nichols, our lady of the phones. Thank you so much, lady with a smile in her voice. Speaking of a smile in her voice, we've got somebody who was with us right now who sent us a question recently, and it is about Windows 8. Craig, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hey, thanks, Foster.
Thank you so much for coming online with us here. You have a concern about where you land when you open up your PC, right?
Right. So my question is, you know, when the PC, my laptop actually, opens up, it comes into the big new Windows 8 icon-driven desktop. And along with that, I get the most annoying charms bar that will not go away when I'm using anything. So I I'd like to know, can I get rid of the charms bar and just have my laptop start up in the desktop mode?
Yeah.
And in short, can I get rid of that charms bar?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I just Googled some of matter of fact, I'm on my Surface, which is a Windows 8 machine, and I just, it's kind of a nice thing about this, by the way, about the charms bar, which for those of you who may not be familiar with Windows 8, you bring in by simply swiping in from the right-hand corner, the upper right-hand corner, and you can search by simply starting a type, and so I typed in there about how do you boot to the desktop in Windows 8, and lo and behold, our buddy, Rick Broida, has an article. Mm. It's called How to Boot to Desktop Mode in Windows 8.1. And what we'll do is we'll pass this link on to you. Basically, he has the same kind of complaint, which is that Windows 8 and Microsoft force you to boot into their tiled screen, which is what you don't want to do, right?
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, I was just going to ask, Craig, are you using a touch screen?
No, the laptop that I purchased does not have a touch screen, but it does have the Windows 8. In hindsight, maybe I should have got the touch screen.
Yeah.
You know, we need to help you out. We'll help everybody else out that's listening that hasn't bought a new desktop or laptop with Windows 8 or 8.1 on it. Get a touch screen. Right? Mm-hmm. You'll not be able to do that unless you buy a new computer. But I think Windows 8 is not made for anything but a touchscreen.
On a laptop or a tablet kind of thing. Right.
Now, is your reason for calling in is because every time when you're using your mouse on your screen, you go over to the right-hand side, the little charmy guys pop up?
Yeah, and I think, you know, over time I've tried to train my finger not to go too far. but when you have a long drag, it just pops up, then you got to touch somewhere on the screen to make it disappear.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a hassle.
One thing you might want to try, and I haven't done it because on my Mac I don't have that problem, is to go to Control Panels and find out wherever there is a touchpad type control on there and disable the swipe function from that, or disable the swipe function on your mouse, and that'll make that go away as well.
The other thing, Craig, and this is the recipe that Rick Broider gives, so let me give this to you quickly, and then we'll also post the link to this as well. He says, after booting Windows 8.1 and opening up, he said, click the desktop tile. So you'll get the Metro interface. Click on that desktop tile to enter the desktop mode, or however you want. And then it says, right-click any open area in the taskbar, and then click Properties. Then the third step is, click the Navigation tab, and then check the box next to go to the desktop instead of start when I sign in. In other words, there'll be an option for you to do precisely what you want to do. And it's there right now with Windows 8.1. Click OK and then reboot. And what should happen is you'll go right into, when you reboot then, you'll go right into the desktop.
Oh, that's perfect.
Okay. Now, as far as getting rid of the charms bar, I'm not sure exactly. Cal, you, the solution you proposed, I guess, is one of the ones. I have not really handled that. I use the Charms Bar and like how it functions. But again, I'm working with the touchscreen here. I'm on the Surface 2, and Gary's on the Surface Pro 2. So, again, yes, for our listeners out there, and Craig, I'm sorry we got the word to you too late, having a laptop with touch on it really is an advantage when you're using the whole Windows 8.1 setup.
And it'll also accelerate your carpal tunnel syndrome, too.
Although, I have heard that because there are a lot of people in enterprise who don't have touchscreens around, that they are using this particular method to go into that. Sherry, you're nodding your head. Is that kind of thing?
Yeah. I have a rollerball mouse as opposed to, mouse. Right. And I will tell you that by the end of the day, my index finger's a little tired.
Yeah, exactly. So, you can then, Craig, and that's the good news, I guess, for you. There is a recipe, and it's a pretty simple one for you to be able to get into the desktop right away when you boot up. And as you said, it will look more like the old Windows 7 Pro kind of look for you, okay?
Yep, that sounds great.
Marvelous. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And by the way, again, folks, that article was written by Rick Broider, who is our gadget guy. Rick does a lot of this kind of thing of getting a really good kind of answers to some very practical problems. And he's also the cheapskate. Now,
he's here with us at least once a month.
Yes.
He lives in Ann Arbor, so not a difficult drive for him to come in.
No, we're delighted to have him on there with us. Now, Cal, there were a couple of questions that came in during the week also about things that have to do with with Macs. And one of them I saw there, I think, let's see if I've got it right.
Are you talking about the one that gentleman was saying, hey, my SSD drive keeps filling up with backup files.
Yes.
Why is that happening?
Yes, that one from Rick. Yes.
Well, I'm assuming that Rick is running his Mac and he's getting this fill up of backup files on there. Chances are pretty good he's got Time Machine turned on that machine.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's got Time Machine turned on, it does create those backup files. Now, if he wants those files to go away, it's a real simple process, believe it or not. All he has to do is go up to the top on the menu bar, click on the Time Machine icon up there, and turn off Time Machine.
Ah.
Wait, I don't know, 5-10 minutes. Turn Time Machine back on. When he turns off Time Machine, it will automatically delete those backup files,
okay,
and they'll be gone and free up that space for him.
Now, by the way, now he mentioned that he's got an iMac i7 processor, 128 gig SSD, and a 1 terabyte hard drive.
Correct.
I'm guessing that he should be saving his Time Machine someplace else than the SSD drive.
No, you're not guessing. You're absolutely right.
Right.
What he needs to,
he
probably has what they call a fusion drive. In other words, they take
a
combination of an SSD drive and a mechanical 1 terabyte hard drive, and they join it together. If he is, in fact, is saving his Time Machine files to that internal drive within the iMac, yes, he'll get some sort of recovery features to it, but if the internal hard drive goes bad, but if the Mac itself falls to some sort of demise, either from environment, mm-hmm, water, fire,
right,
or from some malady like thievery, then he'll be out of luck for his data. So what he needs to do is get an external hard drive,
right,
either a Thunderbolt class 1 or a USB 3.0 class 1, attach it to the external of the machine. As soon as he attaches that drive, it'll come up and say, hey, would you like to be a time machine drive? And he'll say yes, and then he'll start putting his files over on that drive, leaving the internal drive.
You know what this reminds me of, Gary, and Sherry, maybe, I don't know if you've run into this, but on the old PCs, your Windows 7 PCs, they very often had a partition on the hard drive that had the original install on it. And it had some space, maybe less like a 10 gigabyte space in there, and you had maybe 5 of it was for your basic programs, right? So that if something went crack down, you could go back to there and reinstall the factory settings, right?
Correct. It was called a recovery partition.
And we used to have the problem that people would say, that's filling up. Well, it's because they were putting their stuff into there, and they shouldn't have been. They should have been just leaving that alone. And as you said, use an external drive to put the stuff in.
The manufacturers got wiser toward the end there, and they locked that drive so you can't write to it. Right. You can only read to it. And so that took that problem away
from us. Pretty much it. All right, back in just a minute. We've got some more questions we're going to be answering for you folks out there that you've shared with us here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. By the way, I hope that you will use us as a resource on a regular basis. You may have downloaded this as a podcast or listening to us on one of our affiliates. However you happen to get the content of our program, you ought to know that InternetAdvisor.net is a resource for you 24/7. Ed Riddell has created a toolkit there that's got some great stuff in it that you can download. You'll find links to our podcasts so you can go back to past programs and listen to them or portions of them. It's a great resource. In our show notes, for instance, today, Sherry Cam, who was with us talking about YouTube, gave us a whole load of links that will take you back to ways in which YouTubes can be used and maybe give you some ideas on how you can use it yourself.
My God, Foster, have you forgotten your German roots? We don't hope that you use it. You will use this and you will love it. It is the Internet Advisor, Axton. Mark Snell, tune in every week.
There we go. There we go. That's what we needed, a little more of that kind of evangelism.
Yeah.
Sherry, we...
Where do you come up with this stuff?
I got this huge bag underneath the desk here.
It actually is all rumbling around inside of his head.
It
occasionally pops up. Sherry, during the break, I asked you a question that I'd like you to talk maybe a little bit about. We're talking about YouTube, how you get content up to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
What are ways that people can record and formats and things like that to get their stuff up to YouTube?
It will accept the MP3s that were made, and then, of course, the MP4s, depending on what it is that you wanted out there. You can also use Java, you know, getting information out there, and you can in Flash. But essentially, it just has to be read by YouTube itself. And so if you can view it, And then you can upload it.
You know, I heard that there was a great little tutorial on how to do this on YouTube.
On YouTube. That's exactly it. That's right.
And
that's
it
right.
Really is. Because that's how I figured it out, was I went to YouTube, and it tells you step by step what you can do, what you can't do, and what you should do, and best practices.
Google it, and you'll find out how to do it.
And here's the thing, is anything that I need to actually develop mm-hmm. on Facebook, I have to go to YouTube to figure it out, because the help section on Facebook is not as extensive as you really want it to be.
Yeah, that's right.
Very good.
Hey, let's go. I don't know. This is really weird. If I pick up my iPhone 5, uh-huh. and if I turn on the video camera and videotape Gary, and then after I'm all done, if I say stop and hit that video, it comes up with a little thing that says, oh, my God, you can directly send it up to YouTube.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
So that's one way you can do it as well.
And the new phones that are coming out are doing exactly
that. The Android phones are doing the
same
thing.
Absolutely.
Could you erase that, though?
Let's see. Bluetooth.com. No.
Well, hey, let's go back to another question that some of the folks have been sending in. Melissa sent us a question. Here she said, I enjoy your show. I'm known as a dinosaur. I use my 11-year-old laptop for only Hotmail and Google searches. I look up my bank statements and credit card statements periodically. As of 4/8/14, that's the date when Microsoft is going to essentially pull the plug on Windows XP. That's the end of life. And by the way, folks, what that means is they're not going to be putting out regular security updates to it and developing those things.
And what it really means is that as soon as the next vulnerability is discovered, Microsoft's not going to patch it, and everybody's going to use it to go after your computer if you have an XP. And what they do is they just send out these little bots, and they go knocking at the door of every PC in the world, And if it's an XP, they go right in, take over your computer, take anything that, depending on what payload it is, could take over, take your personal information, or could take and use it as a bot to go spam everybody else in the planet. Mm-hmm.
And for the third time, what it really means is it's a great opportunity to go out and buy a new computer.
That's right.
And you know something? There's choices out there that you can go with. So shop wisely and spend your money.
By the way, what we're going to be doing in just, by the way, coming up in March, and this is going to be leading up to that April date, I've been looking at some resources, and we're going to try each week in March, we're going to try to present you with some of the getting ready for this thing. And there's some excellent ZDNet and a few other places have gathered some great resources that I'm going to try to bring together so that we're going to give you some tools for making decisions about what happens when you get to that place.
Well, there's not much you're going to have to decide, right?
Well, and here's the other interesting part on the conversation that we had in the first hour, which is Grosse Pointe Public Schools is on XP.
Oh.
And that's really why we're trying to get this thing out here, because we know that they'll be knocking on our door, and we don't want them farming for kids' information. We don't want them farming for
absolutely not.
At least they won't be able to empty the kid's bank account, unless the kid has a bank account, of course. But they would, you and me, if we had
Grosse
XP.
Grosse Pointe bank account?
They might have. You're right. Good point. The trust fund, anyway. But you're right, Cherry. They could come after every one of those kids because they'll get personal information and be able to. So, you know, it's just something, you know, you got to pay attention to
you
this.
You do. Well, right? And there's get off no XP. Being too careful.
You brought up, Gary, Sherry, with the school system, you brought up a big issue, which is like there are enterprises out there that are still on XP as well, who have held off because it's a huge investment in terms of the software licenses, et cetera. But you got to make a decision because coming up soon, the school system or business, you're going to be vulnerable. Now, it's interesting.
So the difference a little bit is the business will go out and try to protect their network, but they'll have the resources to put a router in front of it. They'll have the resources to put a firewall in front of it. They have more resources than you and I do at home.
Yeah.
Now, that's still not good. Yeah. Right? It's not good by any stretch of the imagination, but they're a little more protected than we would be personally.
Well, Melissa's question is kind of an interesting one. Do I immediately go out and buy a new laptop, or can I wait a few months? Yes, you can wait a few months. Of course you can. Gary was talking about...
You can?
Well...
Sure, you can wait until they identify the next big vulnerability that doesn't go patched.
Well, I don't know. Is it fair to be that alarmist, or is it? Can you, as you said, for instance, protect yourself with a good router?
No. Well, you can. Yes, you should try.
Okay, but you can eliminate that whole risk very simply by updating the Windows 7 or
if the router worked, you wouldn't need antivirus. Hmm. What do you mean? What do
you'd
you think?
You'd still need antivirus even if the router did work, because if you remember back in the old days, there's more than one way to put that virus in the computer.
Right. You can get through the router, you can get through the antivirus. Okay. They're going to get you because they have these robots that'll comb the net. Yeah. And they can do that in a matter of a couple days.
So our advice
all
then?
22 million, you know,
via email.
Million,
that's all they need. Just one email to get through.
Now, the other,
will you be far enough away that it, you know, they don't get to you for a week? Yeah, maybe.
You're playing the odds. Any way you're doing it, you're playing the odds.
But there's nobody to protect you.
Now, she has an 11-year-old computer as well. I think that's something else to take into mind. Now's a good time.
You can only ride the bike so far, and then the wheels start to fall off.
So I'm
in the middle, okay? Gary makes a point, and I understand it and that sort of thing, and I feel that it's more impactful, in my opinion, to the enterprise than it is to the individual consumer. Just my opinion.
Because they can only lose one bank account instead of many more.
Yes.
So it's only your bank account.
And then,
your identity.
It kind of goes back to the old, you know, gun argument. You know, I want a gun to protect myself. Well, you know, no one can get shot if you don't have a gun. But that's another story entirely, and I'm not going to go down that path. The point I'm trying to really make is that there's a point where you have to bite the bullet and say,
put locks on the door.
It's time for me to upgrade my computer. Right. Because, for example, we talked about YouTube just today. Some of the older operating systems can't accommodate the features that are in some of the newer software nowadays.
Right.
So you have to come to this point where it's time to step up to the mic and buy another machine. you know, yes, this deadline's coming in March, but hey, you know, in between that time, you got things like, your income tax refund, if you got one coming back, put a little aside for that. Mm-hmm. Start saving toward those things.
And there are some very, very, very good deals out.
Yeah, you can get into a new computer under $500, mm-hmm. whether it's desktop or laptop, whatever your choice may be, and you can have the latest and greatest that's going on and be up to date with everyone else.
Even gently used, you can get some, for instance.
Exactly. So there's choices out there.
Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's choices out there. There's time when you just got to bite that bullet and you have to just go on to a new operating system.
Sherry, what system do you use? I'm curious.
I'm actually a PC, so I actually use Windows.
Yeah, which version of Windows?
We are Windows 8.
Okay,
yep.
Windows 8 as well.
Yep.
Kind of an interesting question. Let me see if I can piggy this back on and see if we can answer this. For another listener, Clark calls in, wrote in, and he said, I have a Logitech wireless mouse which worked fine with Windows 8. I upgraded to Windows 8.1 recently, and now my left mouse button sticks to the browser windows, Excel cells, and Word document text. I've replaced the mouse with a Microsoft wireless mouse. No change. I've moved the transmitter to several different USB ports. No change. This is on a desktop that I purchased a little over a year ago, but the monitor isn't a touchscreen. Hope you can help because it's driving me crazy. Let's see if we can chew on this a little bit and come up with some answers for him when we come back in just a moment with the Internet Advisor. Thank you very much for joining us here. And don't forget, InternetAdvisor.net is the place to go for all of our show notes and for our toolkit that Ed has put together up there for you. I'd like to thank Sherry Camp for being here. Sherry, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And sure, thank Doug, too, your husband, because it was the first time he
Eric.
Came.
Eric,
I beg your pardon.
Eric. That's all right.
Jeez, your other husband. Oh, I'm sorry. First time he came in, we met you at that point in time, and then we found out what a gifted person you are in terms of dealing with social media. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so very welcome.
For helping us with some very practical ways to use YouTube. And Cal, good to have you here, and Gary as well. Now, Cal, you had some thoughts on this question that came in from Clark. He was having problems when he got Windows 8. He got a computer, and he had a Logitech wireless mouse. When Windows 8 did its first upgrade, which is going to Windows 8.1, and that happened a number of months ago, suddenly his left button on the mouse stuck on browser windows, Excel cells, and also Word documents. In any case, he replaced the mouse with a wireless mouse from Microsoft. No dice. He even moved around that little port that you use for the wireless mouses. Nothing going there. What are your thoughts?
Well, my first thought was, with the Logitech mouse, my first thought, and any time I have a peripheral device that is not interacting with my computer properly, because when you go and buy it, you get it out of a box. It's been sitting on a shelf for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months.
Right.
So when you get it, that driver that's in there was current at the time it was created. But if things have changed since then, mm-hmm. they may have changed the driver. So the first thing I would have did is go to the manufacturer's website and download the latest driver for that operating system. But when he moved to the second mouse and had the same problem again, now the commonality is either the computer itself or the operating system and not the two peripheral devices, although they still could need updated drivers. So then I would go to the manufacturer of that computer, Dell, Mac, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. and I would make sure I had the most current drivers for that operating system mm-hmm. as well. If it didn't work after that, then the last thing I would check on is whether or not I had the most current updates to that operating system itself
exactly.
and make sure it's up to date. And I'll swing it over to Gary and he can take it from here.
Thanks. Well, because that's exactly what we did. We stepped through those that thought process and got to the last option.
Right.
So went out and looked at Paul, in this case, Paul Thurgut's.
Paul Thurgut with the Windows Supersite.
Supersite for Windows. So it looked on his site and it says the Windows 8.1 Update 1 has some modern mouse improvements. And really, this is the update
mm-hmm.
that they're trying to bring the touch screen, which is really what Windows 8 and 8.1 were designed for.
Right, right.
And allow some people to continue to use their mouse they realized that, yeah, the people weren't going to change as fast as they had hoped maybe they would.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to bring that experience together.
Right.
And they did notice that there were some of these problems. And with update one, hopefully that would fix it. So I guess my my first thing, the next thing I would do if I were Clark would be to make sure that he got update one.
Yes.
Now, a lot of times that's downloaded automatically,
yeah,
it, but he could have set it so that it wasn't.
And, what
and
you
then he just needs to make sure that he's on it.
If he's on Windows 8, what you do then is you go into, you'll find this on the right-hand side. When you click the charms on the right-hand side, and you go into the PC settings, I believe, is the one on. Hang on a second. I'll pull it up, and I can do that.
I keep waiting
click on
for
settings.
A...
And then go down to change PC settings at the bottom, and that will then give you the menu that you can go to where it says update and recovery at the very bottom. And click on that and check and make sure that you're getting the automatic updates on that. Because, Gary, I believe what Paul is pointing to there is after Windows 8.1, which was the major one after Windows 8, then there have been, I think, two, or I think maybe the second one's coming out now, but there's there was an update that came out after Windows 8.1.
All right. Okay.
Which I think is what Paul's talking
to. Right, update one.
Exactly.
And, you know, speaking of updates, why don't we just go into the other question that we had for Mac from Ken Williams. Ken writes in, he says, I'm running my iMac, and why when I use autofill to fill in a form, it doesn't recognize it? I have to go back and type it out. It happens on this form, too. And he says he's using Mavericks, which is the latest operating system for the Mac. Now, I'm assuming that he's done all his updates, but if he hasn't done all his updates, it seems that there was an update to the Mac OS under Mavericks, that's 10.9.2, that addresses this problem with autofill. So I would suggest that he would go ahead and make sure he has that update loaded on his Mac and then reboot the machine and see whether or not the autofill selection automatically starts to work again.
Okay, excellent. Now, by the way, he had another part of that question, which was DVD Creator. Is that a good software for burning movies to DVD?
Well, you know, when I saw that out there, I had to go and take a look because he said we had to post it on the site. And what it is, it's a Google ad pops up on our site,
okay,
which is fine and dandy.
Yeah.
But I would suggest that he would go directly to the Roxio site. They make DVD Creator. And if they have a version for the Mac, which I'm not sure whether they do or not, he could download that, and yes, that would solve his problem. My personal
recommendation
is to use Toast Titanium.
Toast Titanium.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think it's a version, I want to say version 13. It's either 11 or 13. I can't remember. But Toast Titanium will allow him to do what he wants to do.
And Toast has been out there for quite a while.
Oh, Toast has been around as long as there's been
Toast. Sure, you do a lot of work with video, too, right?
When it comes to video, actually, the Mac is the better format to use, and Toast was one of the very first, and everything that's been modeled after it has been modeled after Toast.
Okay, so. Is it expensive?
No, heck no. Matter of fact, if you're really lucky, usually Mac Bundle, or Mac Update, I should say, offers bundles every year, and they usually will, you know, for $49, you get like a couple of $100 worth of software, and Toast is usually always in that bundle, and the bundle only costs like $39.
Okay, good. We got one last one here. Let's see if we can tap this one. This comes from Dorothy, and she says, we've just started watching some free videos on the internet. Some work without any problem. Some pause over and over again in the middle of the movie. Sometimes a screen comes up that says we need to download something, which we do not know anything about. Accelerators? Update JavaScript? What's safe? Are these things on the up and up? Do I need to download something to watch some of these? What's your question? What do you think? She's using Windows 7 and has Firefox and Internet Explorer. She's got a 62-bit machine, and she also uses a Google browser.
It's a buffering issue.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it's that the video itself doesn't have a built-in buffer.
When that happens, is it the issue? Is it with the feed coming in rather than my computer?
It can be how many users are viewing it.
Okay.
It can be the whether or not it's built into the video itself. And then there are, what is that, free TV program, I'm not remembering what it is, where there are fishing expeditions on the site that want you to download the HD version
of the
viewer.
Because it's jittery, they want you, then go to this feed and you'll get this perfect.
Exactly.
Be very careful. So for people who are like, say, what do I do? What is a safe way of consuming videos? What would you say?
Well, Safeway is always obviously buying the video itself. But if you're going to watch videos that are on a channel itself, you may have to go to the next person who's actually posted the video, because they may have built in a buffer so that you can see it. Usually on a lot of those sites, you'll have a number of people who have uploaded the exact same videos. And so some are more tech savvy than others. And so you may hit upon a user and then keep them
Know who that user
exactly,
is.
Exactly, because then they know how to build it for your next viewing.
That's interesting. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And this must be through YouTube in particular you're talking about, or just in general?
Just in general.
In general.
Yep, just in general.
Good advice. Sherry Camp, thank you so much for being here.
Certainly.
Great tutorial for us on YouTube. And Cal, good to have you here as well.
Thank you.
Gary, as always, good to have you in here.
We'll see you next time.
And folks, don't forget, InternetAdvisor.net is your resource all the time, 24/7. You can find our podcast there. You'll also find the show notes from today's program and lots of great resources up in that toolbar, especially the toolkit, where we put a lot of resources in there, free resources, to help you keep safe when you're on the internet and also to fix some of the problems you may run into when you're out there. Once again, thanks to Annie Nichols and to Shannon Bailey, who has been here with us as well behind the glass making the program run. We'll see you again soon here on the Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.